Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
We have come together for the purpose of dedication. And we must understand, first of all, that while it is done, it really can't be done. That is, the dedication of a building, the dedication of an edifice. You read of such things in the newspapers as being done, but they never are. Somebody is entertaining a false sense of the realities. Because an edifice is a dead structure. It has no life, it has no being, it has no consciousness, it has nothing. It is an empty vehicle. And it never can be anything but an instrument, something to be used. To be rightly used, there must be a dedicated consciousness. When there is no dedicated consciousness, the building can become what so many buildings are. Whether it is a city hall, a state capitol, a national capitol, Hall of Congress, we like to think them as being holy, but they aren't. And very often they serve unholy purposes in spite of the fact that they have been dedicated. The answer is they never have been dedicated because it isn't possible to dedicate a corpse. And an edifice is only a corpse until it is governed by a consciousness. And if the consciousness is dedicated, the building, the edifice, serves the purpose for which it was intended. And in the very moment when that same building is no longer governed by a dedicated or consecrated consciousness, the building no longer serves that purpose. And so it is that as you look at this particular edifice, which is devoted to the presentation of the message of the infinite ray, just remember this, that this edifice will never be anything more than the state of dedication and consecration of the leader and those who come for study. Consciousness can be dedicated. On the human plane, well, first of all, there are two kinds of people on earth, the living and the walking dead. And the living are those who, in some measure, have dedicated themselves to some purpose. There are those who have dedicated themselves to the marvelous causes of Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts and YMCA and YWCA. And others have dedicated themselves to nursing, medicine, the ministry. And those who have dedicated themselves to something are living. They're drawing forth life from the source. The others, the walking dead, are not drawing forth life or inspiration from anything. They are living the animal life, the vegetable life, just drawing forth whatever life is to be found in the air or food, an animal form of life. No one lives really until they have found something greater than themselves, something to which they want to devote themselves, consecrate themselves, dedicate themselves, and then they begin to live. Men have really lived who originally met together to place a Bible in every hotel room in the world. And every one of the men that joined in that enterprise were living men who found a purpose in life and drew forth from life some wonderful good. We then can dedicate ourselves, consecrate ourselves to a purpose, and when we do, everything that we touch takes on the nature of sacredness. Then you can say that the very walls send forth a healing grace. The stones, the floor, the ceiling, everything is imbued. But imbued with what? Imbued with the consciousness of those who participate in the activity. They are not endowed from anything out in the air or up in the sky or down below. They are dedicated only by the state of consciousness within the edifice. Therefore, when individuals unite to produce an edifice that is to be devoted to a spiritual subject, you may be assured of this, that it, the edifice, is going to show forth the nature of their dedication, those who have participated in it. If we find in the building, in the rooms, beauty or harmony or healing or comfort, it isn't from the room and it isn't from the furniture and it isn't from the colors, or the combination of colors. It is from the consciousness of those who have united to produce this effect. So it is. If an edifice of this nature is to serve its purpose, those who participate must not look to the infinite way for their blessing, but to the consciousness of the individuals who participate in the activity of the infinite way, for that is where the blessing is to be found. It is not to be found in its books. It is not to be found in its tapes. It is to be found in the consciousness of those who have produced these. It is for this reason that those who become active in a work of this nature, any spiritual work, must understand the need for fitting preparation of consciousness. In other words, we give forth no more to our activity, to our students, to our patients. We give no forth no more than what our consciousness is. And if we allow our consciousness to be burdened with human affairs, if we allow our consciousness to be penetrated with the appetites of this world, then of course we have that much less to give. Now remember that I do not mean refrain from the activities of this world, because above all things this message demands that we remain in the world, that we participate in all of the activities of the world, the business activities, artistic, natural, commercial, political, because we bring to these the higher dedication of our soul. And in the end, if business is to be conducted on a higher plane, art, industry, government, it will only be because introduced into the strata of society is the consciousness of those who are dedicated. It is very much like our human body and human mind. A human mind and a human body never improves. It has nothing within itself to bring about an improvement. As a matter of fact, it deteriorates. And as the years go on, the mind, the faculties, and the body deteriorate. Unless something is introduced into the consciousness of an individual, of a spiritual nature. Something of a spiritual nature must be introduced into the consciousness of an individual, and then the mind and the body, permeated with that spirit, can act 100 years, 120, 150, whatever the need may be, and without deterioration. So be assured of this, that just as the mind and the body, left to themselves without spirit, will deteriorate, so will an edifice, whether it is erected to God, whether it is erected to a spiritual purpose, whether it is erected to good government, will deteriorate, not only physically, but in its functional use. Unless there is introduced into that activity the spirit. It is for this reason that we have experiences, of which you will hear more and more as the years go by. A few months ago, the sales manager's clinic of the Chevrolet automobile was held at the Michigan State University. And during this clinic, which was to promote the sale of automobiles, the professor introduced the contemplative life for reading, suggested reading for the sales managers and salesmen. This is introducing a spiritual note into a commercial activity and raising the level of the activity from just selling automobiles, perhaps, to giving service, selling service, and giving value, selling value. In the same way, there is an organization of about 20 of our large corporations now giving a course of instruction for executives of large corporations throughout this nation. And at the bottom of this course, it states that for recommended reading all of the writings of Joel Goldsmith, especially Contemplative Life, and stating that many of the principles taught in this course are based on these writings. Now, here again is introducing spirit into industry, into the consciousness of those who govern industry. And you can be assured that industry is going to rise no higher than the consciousness of those who participate in industry. And therefore, if you can introduce a spiritual note into industrialists, whether at the highest level or lowest level, when you can introduce the spirit into someone in the government, you can introduce it into the government, but only into someone or more in the government, you eventually bring about that condition of industry or government or art or profession, which is so much to be desired: honesty, integrity, fidelity, doing unto others as we would have others do unto us, loving our neighbor as ourself. None of this can be accomplished without introducing a spiritual note. No one can introduce a spiritual note except someone dedicated to the spirit. Now, at first, we undertake an activity of this nature for some reason peculiar to the individual. Each one enters a work of this kind for a different reason. Some are forced into it against their will. Others enter it very willingly and very gladly. Others enter it prematurely. Each one has some reason that places him into it. But the main point is this. They're not going to remain in it. They're not going to be successful in it. except in proportion as they learn how to open their consciousness to the inflow of the Spirit and make this a matter of praying without ceasing. Not just a morning period before starting out, or a morning and evening, but one of continuous dedication to a spiritual purpose. The question that immediately arises is this. If this is true, why are we not more dedicated than we are, or why are there not more people of dedicated consciousness? And the answer is this. Dedication comes as a grace of God. No one can seek it. They may desire it, but that's as far as they can go. No one can strive or struggle for it because it isn't won that way. It comes as a grace, and that grace comes with our preparation. You know, as you travel the European countries, if you have thought of this at all, it must startle you to see the wonderful edifices in most foreign countries. Churches, cathedrals, places like Westminster in London, or the great temples of Greece, the wonderful buildings and statuary of Italy. And stop to think that they had all of these when we only had log cabins. And as you read the literature of Europe and see how far advanced they were culturally, 800 years ago, you can understand why there is a greater interest in spiritual things there than here. Because we here have only had 200 years and we've had to carve out an empire. We've had to lay railroads from coast to coast. We've had to build farms. We've had to build industries. Our whole attention here for 200 years has been on the building of a nation, and mostly economically, structurally. And only now are we beginning to find the opportunity for the turning to the things of the Spirit that already come natural to so many generations of people who have not been a part of this pioneer building in the United States. It is for this reason that there have been so few mystics in this part of the world and so many in other parts of the world. So with each one of us, we have periods in which we are so devoted to our business activities or art or profession, and we are so busy raising families, that the cultural side of life comes second, and the spiritual side of life comes third. For this reason, most people come to a spiritual way of life rarely before middle age. Usually by the time the children have grown up, or the business has gotten on its feet, or the profession is established. Now, we are coming into another age in which we start with the children before they're born and lead them into the spiritual life. And the reason is that by now there are enough grandparents and parents in this nation, ready to include the spiritual life as a part of their daily life. In past generations, it has been very much neglected not only here, but in other parts of the world. But until we bring the spiritual factors of life into our experience, we are not the whole man. Now, it is only a few generations ago that we had only physical men. The mental side of man was practically unknown, with the exception of a few artists and writers. The mental side of man was almost unknown. He was a physical being. Then a few decades ago, we began to understand the nature of the mind, and we entered into a more mental period of life. And from then on, we have had this whole era of inventions, science, discoveries, all of which come out of the mental realm. Then we had to pass from that, not leaving it behind, remember, but going a step further into the spiritual. Because you do not have man until you have a soul, a mind, and a body. In the way the human life has been lived, we started with a physical man, a physical baby. And we tried to instill something of the mind into them, something of discipline, art, science, culture, music. And we left the child to find his own way spiritually. We may have sent him to a church, but that had nothing to do with his spiritual development, as he soon found out. Now we understand that man is threefold. There isn't any question about it that man has a body, and there isn't any question about it that man has a mind. But now we know something further. We know the nature of man, and that is neither body nor mind. Man is really soul. The soul is the man, and the mind is an instrument that the man uses, and the body is another instrument that the man uses. And when the soul is awakened to its spiritual capacities, it uses the mind for clean, intelligent purposes, and it uses the body for clean, intelligent purposes and healthful purposes. When there is an absence of the soul, when there is an absence of a spiritual sense in man, you have only a mind and body. And that mind and body can just as well be dedicated to evil as it can be to good. It can be dedicated to bad power as well as to good power, but not when the soul has been awakened, not when the soul has been realized, not when the spirit is opened. Then man loses the capacity to be bad. He loses the capacity to use his mind or body for erroneous purposes. He has no choice. Sometimes it is thought that man has a choice as to be good or evil, or to be spiritual or not spiritual, but he has no such choice. As long as his soul faculties aren't awakened, he has got to live in the realm of mind and body, and it can be bad or good or a combination of bad and good. But once the spirit is awakened, once one has received the tiniest bit of dedication, the mind becomes a purer instrument, the body becomes a purer instrument, and as we will discover, we will be enabled to use mind and body unto a far greater age than our past generations. Here comes a difficulty. At a certain stage of our development, we hear words like these, read words like these, and we have an inner feeling of the rightness of them, and then we have the feeling we'd like to do that. And tomorrow we start our regular business lives and we find it's well nigh impossible. It sounded so well today, it sounded so easy today, and so desirable. But oh, tomorrow when we have our relatives on our neck and our bosses and the rest, then it becomes an impossibility. And here is where, in the beginning, it is necessary for us to make a choice whether or not the goal is worth striving for. Because if we decide the goal is worth striving for, we will make some effort toward a dedication or consecration that will lead us to the eventual point to which we must come. And that is to where we realize the futility of our own dedication and devotion and consecration, and realize that unless we have been dedicated by God, all of our self-dedication is going to come to a very quick end. However, it is a step that each one of us has to take. We have to make the decision to be worthy. We have to make the decision to try to practice principles. We have to make the decision to remember consciously. And then as time goes on, it gives the opportunity, it provides the preparation for the entrance of God. And now that brings us to an essential point of our particular work in this message. It starts with the master statement, "I stand at the door and knock." First of all, we have to put the book away, even the Bible, and ask ourselves what this means. I stand at the door and knock. It has no reference to Jesus because he was crucified 2,000 years ago, and according to the reports, he ascended on a cloud and went out of sight, and he hasn't been seen since. And yet, there it stands for all time, I stand at the door and knock. Well, we have discovered that whenever the Master spoke of I am come that ye might have life and that ye might have life more abundantly. I am the bread, the meat, the wine, the water. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the resurrection. Whenever he spoke of I in that sentence, he was speaking of the Christ, the Spirit, the soul of man, the spiritual essence of being. And therefore, this statement really means that my soul, my purified self, not purified self, no, my pure self, that which was never impure, that part of me which is really divine, the I of me, the soul of me, from before my birth, this spiritual presence and power was standing here at the door of my consciousness seeking entrance through ignorance, spiritual ignorance, religious ignorance. We didn't know that. Therefore, we lived out here in our lives with whatever occupied us. We went through some very nice experiences. We went through some very bad ones. We went through some very rich ones and very poor ones, very pure ones and very sinful ones. And all the time we could have avoided it all and had nothing but heaven on earth. But no one told us that the soul of man, God is the soul of man. And this soul of man, his own soul, is always standing at the very door of his consciousness, knocking for entrance into the mind and body, trying to take us over and live our lives, to bring us to the place that Paul came when he said, I live, yet not I, Christ liveth my life. And this same Christ, or Son of God, the same Spirit, or soul, is waiting to take over our lives and govern it and make the crooked places straight. Go before us to prepare mansions for us. But we don't know that. We haven't been taught that. And so we struggle But now through spiritual revelation, we know that I do stand at the door of your consciousness and knock. I, your soul, your divine self, is knocking at the door of your mind, seeking entrance, to take over the government of your mind, to consecrate your mind to itself, to its uses instead of to your uses, to consecrate your body to its uses, not to your pleasures, to take over your home, your residence, your business office, and consecrate it to its purpose. If you could only know what a new sense of life this awakens in us. Once we know that my body is the temple of the living God, therefore my body should not be at my disposal for my particular use, but should every day be dedicated to God for God's use. My home should not be my palace. My home, every day, should be turned over to God, that God may take that home and use it for God's purpose. My talents, whatever they may be, came forth from God. One has an artistic talent, one has a scientific talent, an inventive talent, another has an industrial, a commercial talent, a money talent, a government talent. But the difference that comes into a person's life when they turn their talent back to God and their home and their mind and their body and let God dedicate it to God's own use, that I may be a fitting instrument for the divine. Now, life becomes something entirely different because I begin to perceive, even if it's only through a glass darkly at first, I begin to perceive that there is a purpose in life of which I had no knowledge. For instance, all of these centuries, the suns and moons and stars and planets that have been floating around up there in space, and as far as we know, for no good reason, and held together by no specific law. Now all of a sudden we come into an age when we are beginning to perceive that there is a law that keeps the stars in their courses. And this must be for a purpose. And then we discover, why, yes, the sun is there to give us just the right amount of heat and it's kept far enough away from us, so forth and so on. Everything has its purpose, but everything has a purpose that was divinely ordained. It was not ordained by man. Someday we will discover that all of these things that we today misuse, as we so often misuse our railroads and airplanes and telephones and telegraphs, we misuse our theaters to some extent, to a great extent. We will discover that these too were God ordained. Every one of these mechanical gadgets was God ordained. They had their form in the soul of God. They were projected into the mind of man and formed materially outside. And then we think for our use. But you'd be surprised what will happen when you begin in your daily prayers to realize that God ordained them for God's use. And you'll watch through this realization how God will hit the hands of some of these people who control these things and say, you didn't dedicate these to the right purpose. I'll dedicate them now for my purpose. And you'll witness how every single gadget, every single instrument, every piece of machinery will serve a purpose which will bless mankind. Why? Because we will take it and put it back in God's hands and let God ordain my mind and my body and my telephone and my household and this edifice And each day, have a period of meditation in which we open our consciousness to let God come in and dedicate the mind and body and business and building to God's purpose. And then watch how, with time, the nature of our business changes, the nature of our use of telephone changes, the nature of our use of the automobile changes. And we'll soon see that all of these really are divinely authorized. So, in the conduct of our spiritual ministry, let us remember that dedication and consecration are two very important words. But let us not think of ourselves as being dedicated or consecrated. Let us think of ourselves as instruments through which God's dedication and consecration is made manifest on earth. Let us not think for a moment that we can dedicate or consecrate this building. But each day, let us open our consciousness that God may consecrate and dedicate this building. And then you'll find that there will be an invisible sign outside the door, thus far and no further. And that will be to the carnal mind. When it sees that sign, as it will, or feel it if it tries to get through, it can't get through. It just cannot get through because God has ordained this edifice unto himself, has consecrated and dedicated it unto his use. And no weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper. If and when thee has surrendered thyself to God's dedication. You must remember that in the 91st Psalm, it did not say that these evil things will not come nigh the dwelling place of everybody. Only those who are dedicated, consecrated, who live in the spiritual place of the Most High. And the Master, in the 15th chapter of John, did not say that God is going to bless all of you and that God is going to prosper all of you. He never said this at all. He said, if you abide in me and let my words abide in you, then you will bear fruit richly. In other words, when you permit God's dedication to take over your mind and your body, and remember several times a day that the mind and the body are really to serve as God's instruments, you'll find that we ourselves will make less use of the mind and body, and God will make more use of these. So too, we do not make a place holy. We do not make a building holy. But by opening our consciousness, we let God in, and then God makes it holy. And so we come back to this. Every day there should be a period in which we remember the statement, I stand at the door and knock. And then close the eyes, turn within, and remember that through your mind, by opening yourself, speak, Lord, thy servant heareth. You invite God in. You say God is within, of course. God is neither within nor without because God is nothing of a material nature. So God cannot be within anything. God cannot be without anything. These are terms that we use to explain omnipresence because omnipresence is the only word that adequately describes the nature of God in this respect. Omnipresence, within, without, above, below, permeating. Therefore, since God, infinity, is omnipresence, the moment I open the door, and you see my mind is the door, this infinity floods me. Then I am under grace. The grace of God is the wisdom that comes through. The grace of God is the presence that comes through. The grace of God is the power that comes through. The grace of God is what gives me my motive. And it also gives me my reward, recognition, fruitage. But I have a part to play. You'll find that as you are raising your children, that unless you do teach them to close the eyes and open the mind, that all the good they will have in school is their own brain, or lack of it, their own degree of intelligence, or lack of it. But as you do teach them that their mind and body are but instruments of God, but you must consciously give your mind and body to God. You can't take it for granted, because it isn't that way. You must abide in the Word and let the Word abide in you. You must consciously speak, Lord, thy servant heareth. I know thou art at the knocking at the door of my consciousness. I'm opening my consciousness. Take over my mind and body. Be my soul. Be my life. Then you find that you can go for hours, rightly guided and directed, benefited, blessed. Then comes another period of renewal. Always remembering, I stand at the door of not God, the infinite, the eternal, the immortal, the supreme. God fills all space, omnipresence. And as I open my consciousness to receive God, the Word abides in me, and I abide in the Word, and then I'm permeated with God consciousness. My mind is dedicated, my body is dedicated, my business is dedicated, my home is dedicated, my art, my talent, my everything is dedicated, and God is using it for its purpose, for which I am an instrument. For it is truly revealed that God exists as man, and we can only love God supremely in loving man. We can only serve God in serving man. For if you say that you love God and do not love man, you are a liar. And if you think you are serving God when you are not serving man, you are a liar. For the only man there is God manifesting himself as the Son of God, for God the Father and God the Son is one. Inasmuch as ye have done it unto the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me, for I and the least of these my brethren is me. I in him, and him in me. I in you, and you in me. We are one. Therefore, because of an occasion like this, when an edifice has been set apart to serve a spiritual purpose, let us know, first of all, that it will not function as such, except in proportion to the dedication and consecration of those who serve in it. Then secondly, that the fruitage of it will only be in proportion to the dedication and consecration of those who come to receive its benefits. Because there is no such thing as receiving without giving. Those who come to receive its benefits here must be willing to give forgiveness. Forgive the brother before you go to the altar. Forgive the others before you pray. Serve in some way your fellow man, in whatever way it may be shown to you, but serve him. Because inasmuch as ye have done it unto the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me, and then you have allowed me to enter you. Yes, we won't stop with dedicating a building. We will dedicate ourselves to the purpose of the building, and then we will take the higher step of dedicating ourselves to God, and letting God dedicate our minds and bodies and edifices to God's purpose. Then we will really know the meaning of dedication, and we will discover why Some people prosper mightily in their spiritual activities and others do not. It is all because they do not understand the nature of dedication. They do not understand the nature of consecration, and they look upon it as some human quality of their own. And because they believe that they are highly dedicated, they look for great results. Now, if the results aren't there, it is because they are more dedicated to self than to God. More dedicated to glory than to God. In this, I hope you see that the mind and the body of a man or woman, separate from spiritual grace, is really the mind and body of the walking dead, and that they do not truly live until the spirit has entered. Then life has a purpose, life has a meaning, because life can now express itself through the individual to the least of these, my brethren. It isn't enough to be good to our families. That's really not enough. Because I think even most of the animal world is that. There has to be a higher dedication than to one's own family. There must be a dedication to others, and sometimes even to the least of these, my brethren. But there'll be no true dedication unless we understand it to be not my dedication, that's promoting the ego, but letting myself be free for the spiritual dedication, the God dedication. Let that come through, that God may bless all who touch, who reach my consciousness. You will notice that this building, even at this moment, reflects and expresses the consciousness of the individuals who are responsible for its being here. Will you just notice 10 years from now, if you like, and if you're around, that this edifice will still express or reflect the consciousness of whoever then may be in charge of the activity. It will never be higher, it will never be lower than the consciousness of those who are responsible for it. And this means that those who are responsible for it will likewise consecrate themselves to those who enter the edifice to serve them. The amount of good that an individual will get who comes here depends then not on those who are in charge, but on the givingness of those who come to receive. Because those who merely come to receive loaves and fishes, who believe they're going to benefit by coming here, are, I'm afraid, going to go away empty-handed. Those who come with a gift in their hand, a gift of love, a gift of forgiveness, a gift of service, a gift of dedication, in some way, they will walk out of here with the fruits of the soul of those who are in charge. It always takes two to make a bargain. Now, in continuing your spiritual activity, bear in mind, insofar as this message of the Infinite Way is concerned, that when you know the message, when you have read it, when you have heard it, when you have been taught it, that you are really not yet in a position to benefit by it. It is only when the spirit becomes an experience, that the fruitage begins to appear. This is not like an intellectual teaching that you can learn with the mind and say, now I can pass an examination and get 99%, and I should be able to demonstrate it. No, you might be able to demonstrate 102% in an examination and go away and not demonstrate 10%. Because the understanding of these principles does not yet enable us to reach the realm of God. It is only an instrument whereby we reach the realm of God. We still must have the experience. When we have the experience, this is quite a different thing. It is very much like, you often hear this in the church world, in the name of Jesus Christ. In the name of Jesus Christ, amen. And sometimes you may wonder what that means, whether it has any value, or how it ever got into religious literature, because people use it over and over and over again and yet never seem to benefit by it. And yet they will pray it and they will use it. Does it have any value at all? Of course it does, if you understand it. You see, when you look at this body sitting up here, you are not seeing me. All you're seeing is my body, but not me. I am looking out at you, but you can't see me. In the same way, I can't see you either. You're looking up here at me. All I can see is, I can see you looking through your eyes, but I can't see you. Now, this I that I am is eternal, is immortal, and will live forever. And it makes no difference whether you destroy this body or not, or whether time destroys it, or disease destroys it, or accident destroys it. Don't ever think for a moment that it has anything to do with me. I will go right on, as you will, because I am an individual, incorporeal, spiritual, an offspring of God, and I am not locked up inside this body. I'm far too infinite to fit into any size body. And because of this, regardless of what happens to this body, I will go on. Not only I will go on, but I will go on as I am at this particular level of spiritual consciousness and continually ascending. From where I am now, every day must come forth some measure of ascension, growth, deeper unfoldment. And this will go on for centuries, for eternity, as I will go on for eternity. Well, so it is. Jesus Christ, during his period on earth, attained a certain measure of spiritual development. Probably the greatest, if not one of the greatest, ever known on earth. Now, the fact that his body was removed has not removed him. He still functions. You can't stop Jesus Christ functioning any more than you can stop yourself functioning or stop me functioning. You can't do that, for I am life eternal, and I go on forever. And Jesus Christ has gone on forever. And those who use this in the name of Jesus Christ, if only they realized that it's really true, that the consciousness of Jesus Christ is just as omnipresent now as it was 2,000 years ago, and it's just as omnipresent in California as it was in the Holy Land. Sometimes we think that maybe California isn't holy enough to hold Jesus Christ, but I can tell you that the Holy Lands were far less holy than California in Jesus' day. It was a very unholy place to be, the Holy Land. Oh, they had lots of religious temples, as they have today. But they had all the rest, too. Only they had it in double proportions. We are only amateurs in sin in comparison to those of 2,000 years ago. But the attained degree of spiritual consciousness of Jesus Christ has never been entombed in any grave, has never been entombed in any slab. Never. That is as omnipresent now as it was then. And you know what he said of it then? Before Abraham was, I am, and unto the end of the world, I am with you. Well, we're not at the end of the world yet. Therefore, that same consciousness is here with us. Therefore, the sacred part of us is our self, our consciousness. That part of us which is here, there, and everywhere, and which blesses in proportion as we permit God to dedicate the mind and body to God's purpose. Then, I can assure you, you are going to discover that your homes will be holier. Your business will be holier. Your banks will be holier. When man has opened his consciousness to let this divine consciousness permeate, dedicate, consecrate, and then you'll find that everything will be raised up to the spiritual level of service. The difficulty? Yes, the difficulty is this. In the early years of our work and study, there has to be a conscious activity take place constantly. In other words, we have to wake up every morning, and before we get out of bed or within a very few minutes after, we must remember that I stand at the door and that here it is early in the morning and I'm dedicating this moment to opening my consciousness to thy presence, to thy grace. And probably before noon, we'll have to steal away for a few moments again to let God consecrate our minds and bodies to God's use and our business and our homes. And so it is that for quite a few years, it's a conscious effort of remembering many times a day to open ourselves to divine dedication. But it's only the first 100 years that are hard. After that, it gets to be a natural thing to live in this consciousness. Just those first 100 years, they are difficult. But they pass quickly. They pass quickly. You'd be surprised. Do you know how many million years have passed since there's been God on earth? And just think of a little tiny 100. It's really nothing. When, then, our consciousness is dedicated and consecrated to God, our mind, our body, our edifice, our home, our business is likewise dedicated, and that is the goal of life. Thank you.